All right, so good morning, everyone. It's fine that I'm standing here. I feel like I'm very far from all of you. Hello. My voice is loud enough. It's fine. It's all good. Maybe I'll even get a little bit closer over here. Can be even better. I can also go in the middle, actually. Why not? That's actually a good idea. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we'll go in the middle. Why not? And those of you who want to maybe just move a little bit, and then you can... You will be able also to see me, not only to hear me. So, Boker Tov, and good morning, and Shavua Tov. My name is Idan Rakovsky. Some of you I know very well. Some of you, I think it's for the first time. I am an Avrech in Beit Midrash Zichron Dov, under the leading of Rabbi Trachiner. And I'm also the rabbinic assistant at Shaarei Tefillah congregation, not too far away. My wife, Priel, who we just saw, she will be here in a minute, taking care for the milk, and I, we're both shlichim in the community, which means that we came from Eretz Israel for a limited time, not just to move to Canada, but to be here with the Jewish community and to learn, to engage a little bit, to teach, and just, you know, to try and enhance and enrich the Jewish life of Toronto as much as we can. So thank you very much for having us here for this morning and in general, and thank you all of you for coming. I would say before we start that this entire morning of learning is dedicated by Dovid Goldberg for all the wonderful shiurim that the Toronto has and benefits from Beit Midrash Zichron Dov. So thank you very much for that. We decided when I spoke with Priel, my wife, about what exactly we should give the classes on, what exactly should be the topic, the theme, then we said, look, that's going to be the first Sunday after we started the new Chumash, the new book of Shemot, right? We just read live yesterday, Parshat Shemot, where we talk about Moshe Rabbeinu, his birth, the way he's being called to command, to lead Am Yisrael by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we decided it's a great, great opportunity to focus on the theme of manhigut, leadership in Hebrew. All right? So both of the classes will be Tanakh-oriented. Very different classes, you will see. Even though they're both focused on the Parsha, they're very, very different styles, very different, I would say, aspects or methods of how exactly to learn Tanakh. And I will start with my first year because I'm going to start about talk about Moshe Rabbeinu, I would say, birth story. Moshe, or we want to call it baby Moshe, all right? Which is very, very interesting. You all got your sources around the table. Let me know if there is someone missing a source or running around the table. I do want to say first, before we get into the sources, that the fact that the Torah focuses on a story of birth is very unique. What stories of birth do we have in Tanakh? What do you think? What stories of birth? Yaakov, right? We have Yaakov Avinu, exactly. Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov is holding, right, Esav's ankle and so on. All right. What else?
Chava.
Acquired. Okay, interesting. Chava. Maybe Chava that was created out of the bone of Adam.
No, she acquired a son in it.
She acquired a son. Okay. She's talking about Cain and Hevel. Cain and Hevel, birth of, I think, story of birth. You're right, even though it's not so much into details, right? Like, it's not so much into details exactly what's going on.
Benjamin.
All right. Binyamin, kind of. We have in our Avot, we have Yitzchak and Yaakov, all right? We have their story of birth. We have Navi Shmuel, right? Shmuel the prophet. We also have him as, hello, thank you for coming. There's sources around the tables. Wonderful to see you. We have Shmuel, but if you think about it for a moment, many of the leaders of Tanakh, we don't really have any stories about the birth, right? David HaMelech, King David, how did he birth? Like, what is the story of the birth of David HaMelech? We don't know. We have no idea, right? We are only introduced to David HaMelech when he's already a young lad, and he's a shepherd, right? And Shmuel HaNavi, when he wants to go and appoint a king, then he goes to Ishai, his father, and he asks him, so do you have one more son? And he says, yes, I have David. But we're not told anything about his birth. Yes?
But isn't there a midrash that he was supposed to die at birth, David HaMelech, and Adam gave him 70 years of 1,000?
You are 100% right, but it's a midrash. It's a midrash. And now thank you for saying that, because I want to say also it's important. I want to focus on pshat, all right? On pshat of the ketubim, the simple, plain text. It's wonderful. The world of midrashim, of commentary, is wonderful. And I'm actually going to talk about it in this class today. But if we look on the pshat, the plain text, like, we have no idea when David HaMelech was born and how he was born.
So pshat means literal.
Literal, exactly. Plain text. Only the simple layer of literal text. Exactly. So again, we don't know. Also Avraham Avinu, we have no idea. And then we come to that point where we are told about Moshe Rabbeinu. And then there is this story, which we read yesterday in our Parsha, where we're told so much into details about the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? What is the story? Just to summarize the entire story very quickly. So there is a Bat Levi, the daughter of Levi, who marries the son of Levi to people from the tribe of Levi, all right? They marry each other. They have three kids, right? They have Miriam, Aharon, and Moshe, right? Moshe is born. There is a decree by Paro that says every boy that is born needs to be sent and killed in the Nile, right? And then we have this very wonderful story, which I know that all of us watched the 1998 Prince of Egypt, the movie, right? Where we have Miriam watching baby Moshe being put in the basket, and Ofra Chaza is singing this wonderful music and so on, and then the basket goes over the Nile, and there's hippos, and there is sheep, and the basket is almost wrecked and almost broke and everything, and there's this wonderful miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saving baby Moshe in the basket. He reaches the palace. And then Batya reaches her hand all the way to get to the basket, takes it, opens it, and she discovers this cute baby just slipped there peacefully, and everything turns out to be well. Right? What is this story? What is this story? Why do we have it in Tanakh? Now, we should assume also, hey Prof, we should assume also that if the Tanakh told us the story of the birth of Moshe, it's not for no reason. If we're already told the birth of Moshe, that means that there is a message behind it. There's no, every word, every story in Tanakh is meaningful. So I want to focus in this class now and try to answer the question, why did the Torah tell us about the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu? What is this story? And in order to do that, I want to focus on the larger question. And I think the larger question will be able to lead us to this question. The larger question is like the title of the shir, was Moshe born a leader? Or was it just a regular baby, like any other baby? And slowly, as he grew up, he became the leader. And what do I mean by asking this question? Because there's two different schools of thought. Two different schools of thought within our Parshanim, within our commentators, where we see that maybe in a sense, they disagree. Whether Moshe Rabbeinu was just a regular baby who was just born and had this really horrifying beginning of life, or maybe there is something a little bit else. Maybe Moshe was born already with this divine segula, with this divine potential to become the great Moshe Rabbeinu that we all know. All right? In order to do that, I want to give five different examples. Based on the psukim, based on the story of the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, and I want to demonstrate the differences in the commentators. The differences, how the different commentators read it. Now, it's important also to say that Sometimes when we learn Tanakh, then we assume that, okay, I'm learning a pasuk, I might read Rashi, right? I'll read Rashi, we'll see what Rashi means, then I'll move forward, I'll read maybe Rambam, or I will read Ibn Ezra, or Sephorno, or different medieval Jewish commentators, great Jewish commentators, and he says that, beautiful, Shalom Aleichem, everything is fine. But behind the commentary, folks, and it's important to say, behind the commentary, there is a world war. A world war. What Rashi says on one pasuk drives the different commentators totally crazy. How could he say that? It just can't be. There's totally different explanations to the pasuk according to the different commentators. So the differences in the commentators are not only simple differences. They are hiding beneath them something that is meaningful, something that is beyond the understanding. They're trying to convey different messages, such as, how should I read the text? What is the text trying to convey? What is the meaning behind the words that the Torah decided to use? And so on. So we'll start with the first example. was Moshe born a leader or not? And take a look. The story of Moshe Rabbeinu, the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu, as they said, opens at the second chapter of Sefer Shemot with the first verse. I brought it in source number one, the first page over here. The pasuk says as follows. I'll read in Hebrew, then in English. Vayelech ish mi bet Levi, vayikach et bat Levi. A certain man of the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. All right, that's a very interesting pasuk. There's a lot of questions that we should ask about this pasuk. For example, who are they? So we know, we will say, one is Amram, the other one is Yocheved, right? The father and the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu, but the pasuk doesn't tell us yet who they are, all right? And what is exactly Bat Levi, the daughter of Levi? Which Levi? Levi, the son of Yaakov? But it doesn't make sense so much with the timing, right? Because we're saying that Am Yisrael was in slavery for 400 years since they started the slavery. So like 400 years, what exactly is the daughter of Levi? Who is she? And where did exactly this men go? So let's start with the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra, one of the greatest commentators in the Middle Ages, says as follows. Take a look. He says, went. Where did this ish went? Where did this man went? Israel, he says, lived in different cities. And the entire land was called the Ramses land, right? We know that, Ramses land. And maybe, he says, this woman lived in a different city. Look how simple is that. All the great questions we had, the Ibn Ezra says, no. There's nothing so great about what happened. Just like, literally, this man wanted a shidduch. So he saw, look, I don't find shidduch in Toronto. I will go to Muncie. I will go to New York. I will go to Montreal. Because I don't find a girl in Toronto. So this man said, I don't find a girl wherever I live now. I don't find a girl to marry in the city I live now. So vayelech, he went, literally meant that he went. He went to a different city to marry a girl. That's how simple that is, according to the Ibn Ezra. Very, very, very simple. However, if we see what Rashi says on this pasuk, take a look how different that can be. And that's what I say, it's huge differences. Rashi says as follows. What is Bat Levi? Sorry, there's a typo there. What is Bat Levi? He says, this is the daughter of Levi. She was 130 years old when she married this man. And when she gave birth to Moshe, this is why the Torah called her Bat Levi. Do you see the differences between Rashi and Ibn Ezra? Do you see the differences? Well, Ibn Ezra says, oh, that's a regular story of shiduchim between a man and a woman. Nothing so special. Rashi says, no. There is something beyond what we read. There is a woman, she's 130 years old already, and she's going and she's marrying this man, and she gave birth at the age of 130. There's an amazing miracle story that is behind the verse. Now, what does Rashi base his things upon? Midrashim. Midrashim, obviously. There's different midrashim, different rabbinical texts that try to complete the gap between what the Torah doesn't tell us and what the Torah actually does tell us. So I want to ask, what is Rashi trying to do here? If the Torah didn't tell us that she was 130 years old, why is Rashi telling us that she was 130 years old? And even more than that, why didn't Ibn Ezra say that? Yeah. Wonderful. So you talk about Sarah, right? Sarai Menu. In what age did Sarai Menu give birth to Yitzchak? 100, right? 100 years old. And we have this story of Avram and Sarah, and she laughs, and he laughs, and the angels, the Malachim, are coming in. They're telling her, you will give birth, and so on. The entire miracle is being told. I think what the Ibn Ezra tells behind the lines is that Rashi, like, If that was true, what you say, why wouldn't the Torah tell us? Like, take a look what the Torah tells us about Sarah, and she was 100 years old. I assume the Torah should tell us if this Bat Levi was 130 years old, and then she gave birth, where is the story? Where is the story? So according to the Ibn Ezra, if the Torah didn't tell us the story, just like we were told about Sarah, maybe the story didn't happen. All right? That's one example. Take a look at the second example. Verse number, it's in second chapter, verse 2. Verse number 2. Leave your pages. The verse is as follows. V'tahar ha'isha v'telet ben v'tere oto kitov hu v'tatzpinehu shlosha yerechim. So this woman, again, we know it's Yocheved, she conceived and bore a son, and she saw how good he was. The Torah says, kitov, he was tov, he was good, and she hid him for 3 months. Now, what is the meaning of the word good? Tov. Like, when you see a baby, usually not the first thing you say about the baby, oh, this is a good baby. Right? There's other adjectives that we usually use in order to describe a baby. I mean, I'm not saying anything, but if like someone comes, walks to the baby in front of the mother, says, oh, this baby's good, that's a little bit insulting. Like, there's other things you could have said not good, right, about the baby. That's a cute baby, that's a beautiful baby, but a good baby? What did that mean? So also the commentators try to understand. And take a look, now let's start with Rashi. What does Rashi say about that? So good, it means that when he was born, the house filled with light. Very, very famous midrash. That when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, the entire house was filled with light. This miracle, miraculous birth, the house was filled with light. Again, Rashi provides us with something that is not rooted in the text. And sometimes we understand Rashi, we call him the king of Pshat. The king of the literal text. There's nothing literal about his commentary here. Nothing literal. And Rashi here tells us something that is not driven out of the text, right? Now, take a look on Rashbam. Rashbam was Rashi's grandson, all right? Which is very interesting to see how the grandson is a little bit different than the grandfather, all right? Take a look about Rashbam. Rashbam says as follows. Good, what it means good. She saw refers to Hashem saw all his work and it was very good, right? So for the Rashbam, when we say something is good, it right away automatically throw them to a different story in the Torah, which is the story of creation. Sipur HaBriya, right? The HaKadosh Baruch Hu after each and every day said, oh, this is good. Va'asiti, what I did is good. So he says, throw them all the way to this story. There, he says, Rashbam, God looked at his creation and searched for flaws and for things that need to be complete or fixed, right? And then when he saw that everything is flawless, everything is perfect, he said, this is good. Same thing understands the Rashbam. Same is here, he says, that his mother looked at him to check if he was born healthy or does he need any treatment because he was a premature baby. He says he was born after 6 months. Now, how do we know that? I'm not going to put that now because there's a lot to be said about how do we know that Moshe was born premature. There's a lot to be said. But according to the Rashbam, the fact that we know it tells us that it's not about this miraculous light that lit up in the house when Moshe was born. It's just a simple mother caring for her baby and just checking if he's healthy because he's premature. And when she saw that Baruch Hashem, his legs are in place and his hands are in place and he's in good shape, she said, oh, everything is good. Like HaKadosh Baruch Hu said after the story of creation, after he created every and each day. Again, look how different could be the grandfather from the grandson. If for Rashi there is a miraculous story about this baby who was born, and when he was born there was a light filled the entire house, and he was born to a mother who was 130 years old when she got married, according to Ibn Ezra or Rashbam, and again, it doesn't really matter what name, because I'm looking at them as a class of thought, not exactly as different commentators, but as a class of thought of the Rash of Ibn Ezra and Rashbam, we see that maybe the story is not so special at all. Maybe there's nothing so special about baby Moshe when he was born, right? If you're not convinced yet, take a look at the third example. Third example for the third pasuk. V'lo yachala od hatzpino v'tikach lo tevad gome v'tachamra b'chema uv'zafet v'tasem ba'et hayeled v'tasem basuf al sfat ha'yeor. So we're told when she couldn't hide him no longer, right? She couldn't hide him anymore. She got a weaker basket for him and caulked it with slime and pitch. She put the child into it and placed it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. Now I highlighted the word slime and pitch. Chemal vazafet. Why do we care about what materials did Yocheved use when she built this basket? Why do we care? Okay, so she put the basket. Okay, she built it. And he was saved. Why is it important for us to know which materials Yocheved used? And this question also bothered the Parshanim. And again, let's start with Rashi now. What does Rashi say about that? Why does he tell us slime and pitch? He says, with pitch, which is zefet, outside, but with slime, chamar, inside, in order that the tzaddik might not smell the disagreeable odor of the pitch. You see Rashi based on the Gemara in Sota, which is based on the Medrash? Rashi tells us, you know why the Torah tells us about those materials? She put this peach inside, outside, and this slime inside. So this tzaddik refers to the baby, yeah? He calls the baby tzaddik, will not smell the stinky smell of those materials outside. That's what we're told. So this tzaddik, only a baby, right? Only a baby, will not smell the smell of the slime of the outside. Now, obviously we should already say, according to Rashi, this story is not a simple story. That's a story of a baby that was born already being a tzaddik. It's already a tzaddik when he's a baby. He didn't do even anything. He's born in a miraculous birth for a 130-year-old woman. And then when he was born, there was light all around the room. And then his mother saw how tzaddik this baby is. So she decided to put this material so he will not smell. This is a miraculous baby. He would not smell the stinky smell of the basket. This is a story that is a little bit different than the pshat, in the literal text that we see in the parsha. But let's see again Rashi's grandson. Let's see again Rashbam. Rashbam says, look how simple and how short. Why was peach on the outside? So that the water will not get inside the basket. How simple is that? How simple is that? Again, we have different parshanim, a grandson and the grandfather. And you see how they both look so different on the text. They both look so different about what is their role as commentator. According to Rashbam and Ibn Ezra, this school of thought says, we're not trying to fill the gap. We're just trying to understand the text in common sense. Common sense. Regular logic. Why did you put it? Just for water will not come in. So we'll be safe. But Rashi thinks that his role as a commentator is different. He believes that his role as a commentator is to provide us, the learners, with more things that will enrich the text, will enrich the story. Things we would not understand if not according to Rashi. And if you're not convinced yet, let's look at the last two examples that I want to provide you today. Let's look in source number 4. Another pasuk, again, very, very famous. Vatered bat paro lirchot al hayeor, venaaroteh holchot al yad hayeor, vateret hateva betoch hasuf, vatishlach et amata vatikachea. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe in the Nile. While her maidens walked along the Nile, she spied the basket among the reeds and sent her amma to fetch it. Now, I'll pause and I'll say that I would say that again, Baruch Hashem, thanks God, that Priel and I, we were both born and raised in Israel. So Hebrew is our first language, which means that learning Torah in Hebrew, that's natural for us. But when we came to Toronto, and we started to see that not for everyone, learning Hebrew is so simple, obviously not learning Torah in Hebrew, then we started to see that, okay, sometimes we need to learn and teach Torah like we do now, not in Hebrew, in English. But then while I started to prepare my first classes at the beginning of last year, I saw that when I'm starting to translate different sources or different verses, then like suddenly I'm stuck. For example, here, what is the word amata? What is the word amma? What does it mean in English? Now we need to understand, because in every translation there is interpretation. And it doesn't matter if I open Art Scroll Chumash, or I open a Koran Chumash, or I open JPS Chumash. The word that the translator decided to use for understanding what the word amma means says something about the interpretation. Because also our commentators didn't agree exactly on what amma means. So how do you know how to translate it? So take a look about Rashi and Rashbam again, right? The grandfather and the grandson. Rashi says, what is amma? He says, amma means her handmaid. Our rabbis, however, explained, and he adds one more explanation, explained it in the sense of hand, to indicate that her hand increased in length several cubits. Cubit in Hebrew is amma, all right? In order that she might more easily reach the baby. That's a famous medrash. That the daughter of Pharaoh, Kadosh Baruch Hu, did this miracle. sent, stretch her hand all the way to the basket, so it will be easier for her to catch it and grab it and bring the baby closer to her. Again, Rashi brings two examples. One literally means her maidservant, all right? And the other one means, this is literally, that's her hand, that she stretched in this miraculous way all the way to reach the basket. And that's amazing, folks. That's amazing to see what his grandson says. Because obviously his grandson read, Rashbam read Rashi's commentary. He saw those two answers that his grandfather wrote. And yet he decided to choose and pick only one of those two. And take a look. Rashbam says very simple and very short. What is Amma? Amma means her maidservant. Rashbam didn't see Rashi's commentary about the story and the miracle of the hand being stretched and catches this basket. What happened? What happened? Why did the Rashbam decide to ignore this? So we can say maybe Rashbam didn't see it, but I don't want to say that. I think Rashbam obviously saw it. So what do we understand from this? How can we understand it? If not by saying that according to Rashbam, there's nothing miraculous about the story. Just like any baby that is born out there, Moshe was born. And this woman, this Bat Paro, the daughter of Paro, it wasn't for her royalty, for her majesty, to walk into the waters, so she sent her maidservant to catch it, to grab the basket for her. That's the only reason. But Rashi says, no, 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 there has to be something more than that. The miraculous story. There is a miracle about how this daughter of Paro stretched her hand and grabbed the basket. And the last example, in source number 5, what happened when the daughter of Paro opens this basket? So take a look. This is wonderful. ותפתח ותראהו את הילד, והנה נער בוכה, ותחמול עליו ותומר מילדי העברים זה. When she opened it, she saw that it was a child, a boy crying. She took pity on it and said, this must be a Hebrew child. What's going on here? What is a Hebrew child? What did she open? What did she see? It's interesting. Why is it called Na'ar? Right? There's a lot to be said here. Let's see. What Rashi understands. What did she see? He asked. She saw the infant. And the Midrash says, and again he had one more understanding. The Midrash says, she saw with him the Shekhinah, the divine spirit, not less, folks. She opened the basket, she saw the baby, along with the Shekhinah. What exactly that means, to see the Shekhinah? Unfortunately, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't have the schut to see the Shekhinah yet. But Rashi says that when she opened the basket, obviously, he wanted just a baby. There was this Shekhinah along with him. There's something amazing, miraculous, that happened in this story. And what Rashbam would say, yeah?
Maybe it was the light that his mother saw.
Maybe there was the light. Wherever he goes, there is light. Wherever he goes, there is light. Maybe that might be. That might be. In times where there's no electricity, it can be also very useful, right? If you're looking for something in the dark. But I hear maybe that can be the light. The Shekhinah, we assume Shekhinah means light in a certain way. That's a question, why? Why would we refer Shekhinah, the divine presence, with light in a certain way? It's interesting. But this is Rashi, obviously. It's not just a baby. There's something miraculous going on. And the Rashbam says something different. The Rashbam says, anyone explaining, take a look, that the meaning of the line is that she saw the infant, he says, this is an error. Why? Who does not know that when someone would open the basket, that he or she would see the infant? Look what the Rashbam says, like, what? And he talks about his grandfather. He says, what do you think, she saw the infant? Obviously she saw the infant. There is a baby in the basket. What are we told here? There is a baby in the basket. She opened the basket, she looked and she saw a baby? That's obvious. It's obvious that she saw the baby. So he said, on for his grandfather. That's an error. That's not something he should say. He said, surely the Torah did not have to tell us something so elementary. Therefore, he says, the meaning of the line is this. When she opened the basket and saw the infant and wanted to know if it was male or female, she found that the baby was a na'ar. Which according to Rashbam means, what is a na'ar? Means it's a male baby. It's a boy. It's not a girl. That it was male and not female. According to Rashbam, it's even more literal than that. No Shekhinah, no divine presence, not even a baby inside. She just wanted to see if it's a boy or a girl. That's the only reason. And that's what the pasuk says. When she opened it, she saw it was a child, a boy crying. Not a child. Obviously, there's a baby inside, but you didn't know the sex of the baby. And you wanted to know if that's a boy or a girl. How can we summarize everything up? What should we understand from those five examples? First of all, I want to say is we see, and it's important not only to this class, but in any other time you read or learn Torah with commentators and so on. Learning Torah with Rashi, or learning Torah with any other commentators, Ibn Ezra, Rambam, Ramban, Sephorno, doesn't matter which one, it's a fundamental difference. It's not just two commentators that say different stuff. Behind their commentary, there is ideology. And they're trying to convey different messages through their commentary. First and foremost, in trying to say what is their role as commentators. What are they supposed to say? And after that, they write their commentary. So there is a school of thought, we call it the school of thought of Rashi. And there is a school of thought of Ibn Ezra, of Rashbam, and others. I brought here only Ibn Ezra and Rashbam. That's the first thing I want us to take from this. Second of all, and this gets back to the question that we asked, was Moshe born a leader, or was Moshe just born a regular baby? The answer is, depends who you ask. Depends who you ask. If I read the story according to Rashi, then yeah, Moshe was born a leader. He was born a leader before he was born because God gave this wonderful miracle to his mother to give birth at the age of 130. And he was born, there was light all around the room. And then she put him in the basket because this tzaddik baby, this pious baby, would not smell this smell. And then Bat Paro, the daughter of Paro, stretched her hand miraculously, took this basket. And then everything continues that this tzaddik, this boy, had the Shekhinah with him in the basket, and so on. So obviously, if we read the story according to Rashi, that's the birth of a miraculous baby. Obviously, it's a leader. God decided he would be the leader before he was born. That's why Rashi says everything that he says, to understand that Moshe is a different baby. It's not like any other baby. If we ask, why was Moshe the leader? The answer is because God chose him before he was born. And God did everything he could. Set the entire scene accordingly so it will be as proper as it can for this leader to be born. But if we read the story according to the lens, to the eyes of Rashbam, of Ibn Ezra, of others, then we would say that if Moshe was born a leader, maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe Moshe was just a baby Moshe. Maybe Moshe was not an amazing, extraordinary kind of baby. He was like any other baby that is born. Every baby is extraordinary. Every baby is amazing. Every baby is miraculous. I think that it's even more than that. And that's why I personally tend to prefer the school of thought of Rashbam and Ibn Ezra, and not those of Rashi. Because I think that there is something that is even more miraculous, as absurd as it can be, in the commentary of Ibn Ezra and Rashbam. Because I think, again, that's from my humble opinion, that Rashbam and Ibn Ezra, but he's saying that there is nothing so special about the baby, that this baby is an ordinary, regular baby, tells us something very special. That every baby has the potential to become Moshe Rabbeinu. Every baby can be Moshe. And it's not up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu only to decide before he's born whether he will be Moshe or not. It's up to who? To the baby, to the parents, to the education, to also the guiding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu throughout the way, for sure, with the help of God and His guidance. But everyone has the potential to become Moshe Rabbeinu. And this brings me all the way back to my first question, which was, so why are we told about the story? Why are we told about the story of Moshe Rabbeinu, the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu? And I want to say, following the school of thought of Ibn Ezra and Rashbam, we're told so we will know that Moshe Rabbeinu was a regular baby when he was born. A regular. And everything we will read about him, from the burning bush, for him going back, and the 10 strikes, Eser Hamakot, and the split of the sea, going in the desert, everything we will read by the end of Sefer Devarim, everything is just a result of an ordinary, regular baby who was born to a regular family, but was raised to be a leader. And maybe that's the reason why we're told about the story of the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. Thank you very much. If anyone has any questions, I'll be happy to reach. And yeah, just please names and that'll be great. Yeah.
So my question is,
it is names, yeah.
My name is Susan.
Susan.
My question is,
that Rashi's commentary, I understood it, and some of it, it says, like the Midrash says, or the rabbis say, like he was basing what he said on previous text. So does that mean that the Rashbam and Ibn Ezra were sort of discounting those texts, or what? What the text meant?
It's a great question. Rashi obviously bases, and he says, he bases his things on Midrash and Talmud. What I say, what my answer to this very difficult question would be, what I said earlier, is that obviously they knew the Midrash, but for them, they hold that their role as commentators is different. They hold that if someone wants to read Midrashim and learn Midrashim, he should open Midrashim. He should not open them. For them, for Ibn Ezra and Rashbam, I think, because unfortunately we can't ask them, that when they wrote their commentary, what they had in mind is that someone should open my book, my commentary, if he wants to understand the simple text. If someone wants to understand more than that, something that is not written in the text, he should go and open Midrash. He should go and learn Talmud. He should go and learn Mishnah. But if he opens Torah and learns Ibn Ezra, then Ibn Ezra will tell him, I will tell you the simple explanation. It's not up to me to tell you the Midrashim. That's not my role. While Rashi would say, no, obviously it's my role. That's what I'm supposed to do as a commentator. Yeah?
I think usually Rashi is looking for Pshat. And in these psukim, as you followed it through, he just wasn't satisfied with Pshat. And he kept looking for, he went to Midrash because he wanted to prove the point that Moshe
was born. I totally agree. Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree. That Rashi brought those Midrashim to show us that Moshe is not a regular and ordinary baby. That's the reason he brought it.
Otherwise, he would have stuck with
Pshat. That way he brings sometimes two answers. One Pshat and one is a Midrash, right?
He's not satisfied with
it. Here you go. Here you go. Any questions? All right. I hope everything was clear. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll have now 5-7 minutes of a break. And then Priel will give a shiur that is even, who would believe, better. So stay tuned. The best is at the end. Thank you very much, all.